Greetings, valued poll listeners, and welcome to episode 10000.
Triple digits.
Of the Pollist podcast. There are three digits after that number. Centennial time. This is the Pollist podcast. We are a bi-weekly show about comics, pop culture, and faith. My name is Chris Poirier, and with me, as always, usually shoving things into his face. Well, not always, but here he is. He's eating Crustables. It's because we're actually recording in the evening versus the morning. But you know, you always have to do things like that. So that's Hector. We've been doing this for a little over 5 years, 100 whole episodes. Technically, it might be 101. We did a special in there somewhere, and I don't know whether we actually did the comic book thing and stepped it to the side, but either way, here we are, episode 100. Yeah,
I've done some panels and stuff too.
That's true. So I don't know. This is the one that matters. This is the big 100. We'll be resetting everything to the number one by the next episode because that's what comic books do. Just kidding. It's time to do the podcast, so strap yourselves in and prepare yourselves for We've Got Comic Sign. Better put the word out. Can't wait for the nerd out. Better put specs on. Better break necks. Checks for my expansion sets. They call me Obi-Wan. Act like you know me, son. Hector's eating Crustable, so he can't say Neon Glow there. So if you missed it, Neon Glow.
Neon Glow.
On today's episode of the Pull List, we've got a wonderful show for you. We're going to hit the latest news that you need to know, our must-pull recommendations from the last 2 weeks, like for realsies this time, because we're back on track.
Hey, do you think we're going to, like, since we did 100 episodes, they're going to buy us a neon sign that actually says We've Got Comics, so I can pull the string and hear
the neon light up. We've Got Comics sign, and it actually says Neon Glow.
And it'll just be like really luminescent and be blinding, look like the beer girl from The Office.
I really want that. We're gonna talk about some do it for us, Matt. We love you. We're gonna talk about our new favorite number ones and so much more. This is
it's not a favorite, but there was a number one, but it's never
mind. I guess this is the Pollist podcast. Fine. Hector ruined it. It's 100, but fine.
That can be like the subtitle for every episode. It's like, Hector ruined it.
... Are bad. So, newsy things.
Do you remember the sitcom on Comedy Central, early 2000s, called That's My Bush?
I think I'm having a Mandela moment because, like, my brain wants to remember it, but at the same time,
they made a full sitcom on George W. Bush's presidency, like while he was still in office.
Okay, yeah, so my brain is remembering pieces of this, yes.
And it was always about how he would mess everything up. And like the theme song was, he's the president, the resident, he's kind of in charge, he's got everybody saying, that's my Bush. Yeah, I've not seen that in at least 20 years, but that's what it needs to be, like, Hector and everything.
Hector makes everything better. I'm just here to kind of keep us on track in around an hour.
There we go. Fair enough. Tell us about some news, Chris.
Oh, well, thanks. over here in my high-tech newsroom, which is slightly bigger than the closet that I occasionally do it from. Yeah, okay.
That Bo-Katan helmet's looking real nice, though.
Yeah, it's not mine. It's my wife's because I love her. Actually, all that... Most of this stuff is hers. My stuff is in the other room. We got that dual household nerd cred.
All my stuff's right here.
He's like, behold my stuff. We were talking before the episode and then realized that we're supposed to click record so people can hear us talk about things. How it's interesting that some of the comic imprints that we normally don't associate with either truly independent work, or there's a handful of comic book imprints that buy really good IP, other people's intellectual property, and just crank it out because usually, like Titan Comics, they're Doctor Who, that kind of stuff.
Dynamite, bad taste in my mouth a lot of times.
They are a British owned company that typically leans towards British content and everything. And yes, I've heard a lot of people be like, please stop. But there's a lot of IDW almost fell down this rabbit hole for a while, living with just other and crossovers and all that. But Dynamite almost exclusively does, except for, I think, Red Sonja and Vampirilla are technically their properties, which makes everybody go, what? Especially when they came out and they're like, here's some DuckTales and some Gargoyles. And every 80s kid went, what? And we talked about either last episode or episode before that, by the way, some of that's really good. And Dynamite is selling through a lot of stuff. Well, yes. Dynamite came out this week and they're like, cool, we're going to release a true independent imprint. And Mirka Adelfo is going to head it.
Okay.
And I stopped and I went, excuse me?
Well, that lady has a tendency of just knocking random stuff out of the park anyway. So go ahead.
Right. And right, so that was kind of my thing, is it's like, yep, so new creator-owned imprint via Dynamite. And now, I mean, I kind of get it with the Vampirilla and the other stuff, that's kind of in her wheelhouse, because she does like to do the sexy times type stories. But sometimes she's also just, what is going on here, and making you legit stop for a moment and be like, blink, blink, that made me think way deeper than I thought when this thing started. If you remember, like, we sat here for a good season talking about Unnatural, and I still think that's some of her best work to date, because there's been other stuff that we picked up and gone, is it going to be the next one?
Didn't she do Mercy too?
Yes.
Okay.
Those were back to back, and that was kind of the thing, was both of us were like, we really wanted to like this, but no.
Yeah. Then whatever came after that, I was like, no, I'm good. I've tried a couple things, but meh.
I think she might hit again, but maybe this is what she needs, is a little more. I mean, she was at Image. I don't know how you get much more freedom than what Image is going to let you do, but.
Well, and I'm not poo-pooing her creativity, sometimes people are better artists than they are creators.
That's fair. Sometimes the both and. You're going to get one flash in the bottle, or sometimes you're not. We're going to talk about another one of those individuals. I'll do it next. I had it further down my list, but I'll do it next because it makes sense to do this now. That you're right, that sometimes it just depends. But I'm excited to see Dynamite kind of reaching out, because I think they are firing on a lot of cylinders, and hopefully we have some money, so let's do some cool stuff. And I feel like that's when good comics come out. So be on the lookout, because I, with a straight face, am telling you to keep an eye out for Dynamite Comics. None of you can see what Hector is doing to me. So you should go over to YouTube right now and be like, what?
I was making sure you got a proper expression for looking out for Dynamite Comics.
Ah, fair. Yeah, that's fair. So talking again about creators that sit on all sides of things. Equally interesting this week is Jeff Lemire, who literally is everywhere right now.
Yes, he is. I feel like he's kind of quieting down for a minute.
Sort of, but also not, because technically the Bone Orchard series is still out there, and there's a few different stories in that line still. Yeah. Phantom Road is still cranking and saving it for the podcast later, because it's time for Chris's weekly reminder that Phantom Road is still interesting. Spoilers. But Jeff Lemire is going to Boom Studios with his next project. So Boom, who can do no wrong lately, as far as I'm concerned.
They've been pretty solid.
Same kind of thing that over the last few years has just been.
I have an Image book in my pile.
Who let you read that? We'll talk about that in a minute, because who did that? But Jeff is going to Boom, and all he's released is a triangle with an eyeball in the middle and three things. And I'm like, he's going to write a Bill Cipher story. But, only like three of you got that. That's unfortunate, but it's something creepy like that. But he said it's actually going to be it's planned as his longest serial that he has done to date.
Oh.
Yeah. And that's all he gave us, is like this weird Illuminati symbol. And oh, by the way, this is going to be my longest work to date that's done in serial. He's done a couple OGNs, original graphic novels, that are hefty, but they were released as a single unit. He said this one will be longer than his run on Sweet Tooth.
Holy crap. And
that's not short. And that he is completely writing.
Did you ever watch season two of that, by the way?
No, actually that's one of those projects I need to like go down the rabbit hole on, because it's great work. It's just something that I haven't had a chance to visit.
Yeah. I was like, oh wait, I didn't finish that.
So be on the lookout for that, because I'm always interested when Jeff has a long runway to tell his stories. And so far, Phantom Road is proving that dude can do creepy, but also still kind of, like, the Bone Orchard stuff is just straight up weird creepy. Phantom Road and some of his other stuff that leans more towards sci-fi / deep thinking is kind of where I enjoy him more. But I will say,
the Maze one was dope.
Yes. Anytime that I mean, I guess it's cliche for the pastor to say that I like it when he talks about religious themes, but I do, because he doesn't take them lightly. He presents them in what I feel like is a very fair for America to look at and be like, no, this is stupid, but this, and this. Right. And it's just weird. So it should be interesting to see how all that goes. So those are kind of my big pieces there. TMNT Last Ronin, have you heard this?
Yeah,
absolutely getting their movie, and it will be an R-rated adventure.
Well, dude, I mean, just realistically, there is no property I've seen hit comic shelves to have the immediate splash and impact that Last Ronin did.
Mm-hmm.
Because it went from critically acclaimed over for just 4 freaking books, to getting sequel books, to getting a video game in development, to getting crazy statues and toys, to getting a live action movie, all within like a 3-year window.
Right.
Bonkers.
Absolutely bonkers. So there seems to be some mixed feelings on this. Obviously, a lot of Turtles fans and everyone's are, well, it's because of who's been given the pen. I don't know a lot about the individual, but reading through some comments and seeing some of the back and forth, apparently the production and everyone is one of the dudes that has a lot to do with a lot of the DCU scripts over the last few years, which makes everyone go, oh no.
Yeah.
And also there've been some comments out in the cyberspace of, yet again, Kevin isn't really being included. So there's some people that are like, we love it that this star is rising, but the dude's right there. He's willing to help. And I've heard this comment more than once of, when's Kevin gonna, like, a lot of the nonsense that have happened over the last 20 years of the back and forth over the Turtles property, you know, folks had finally been getting over and everything, but it still comes down to the, why won't you let the dude actually play?
If the dude actually penned the story that brought you all this success, why not just let him write it?
Let him have some
credibility in it.
It's so weird to me, but you know, I guess here we are. But oh, well, keep an eye out. We're certainly going to keep an eye out, see what kind of happens as that one unfolds and everything. I mean, I want to see it. I want it to do well, but I kind of agree that it's, let the creative people that were involved in the process be involved in the process. One of my last little notes, this should come as a surprise. Maybe it was a surprise to me, but Valiant Comics is trying not to die again. they are launching with a new publisher. Alien Books, which is still involved with the original owners that bought them out the last time and everything, but apparently is a new publishing house for them. They are launching, actually, technically, they've already launched an event, just nobody noticed, and they didn't announce it till recently, called Resurgence, and they're relaunching all of their lines. I still love Valiant of old. I don't see a lot of evidence that the new companies want to learn their lesson here, but I don't know. So here's hoping that either they figure it out or Valiant can die its earned death at this point instead of having that dead horse dragged out and beaten repetitively. It's just a bummer. It's a really cool universe, and I wish someone would care and feed it, but I feel like those days are still kind of missing. Which leads us kind of to the last thing that requires a moment of Hector and my time. And
because we want you to remember it.
We want you to remember it. So I'm going to read us out of the news section because this is kind of its own thing. So, you know, we got you the news. That's the biweekly look at all those wonderful things in the industry. And as always, you can join in on the conversation with Hector and I over on the Love That Nerd Discord, where tagging Hector does absolutely still work. And he almost fully understands Discord at episode 100, and we're proud of him. He looks concerned, but I want you to believe me that he's there and we're there. And you can come and hang out with us and talk about all those things that you liked, you hated, or probably things that we missed, because that happens every so often. So be part of your local nerdy community over at the Love Thy Nerd Discord channel and scroll on down to comics and you can yell at us or with us. You know, one of those things. But that brings us to just before talking about comics that we talk about that other medium, the small television box that beams wonderful stories to our eyeballs, and a little thing called X-Men 97, which is technically, you know, I guess like some people would say it's the spiritual successor, but it's not. It's actually the successor to the original X-Men, the animated series. And we have to talk about it because of things that have happened in recent times. So if you are not caught up on X-Men 97, you should stop listening or forward about five minutes.
Okay, hold on. There should be at least another episode aired by the time this podcast drops.
You would think so, but people be that way. Still,
we're on episode 5, so you should be on 5 by now.
Yeah, if you're not on 5, yeah,
your soul's still intact.
You have not had a traumatic shared experience with the rest of us. Quick thoughts up front. First couple episodes, I was almost out, frankly. I was like, okay, yep, kind of feels like the old show, which is kind of cool and everything. But after rewatching a bunch of the old episodes preparing for this, I was like, wow, I'm starting to remember why I didn't really like that.
Better.
But it did slowly start getting better. Yeah. And Magneto is right. and there's a lot there to unpack as well, but then they just kind of jaunted along and dropped episode 5 in our laps, and a bunch of grown adults suddenly wept in a single voice across the entire universe.
Before we go there, I'm just gonna say the Madeline Pryor story was meh. Like, you know, I don't care.
Everyone's like, I think my favorite comment on that, just to like say it, is still hate Scott Summers.
I have I went into this saying, I'm not going to think Scott's a douche. I'm not going to think Scott's a douche.
And like, then we were reminded.
And then it's like his first line. He's like, he's whatever. Not. And
my X-Men, stop it.
Okay, he can say to me my X-Men, but it was the not. I was like, are we literally in Wayne's World? Yes, we are. I get what year this is.
They were wearing their tank tops and everything on the basketball court. So yeah, boy. Ugh. We didn't even talk about it, but I saw the meme when this show was being promoted that said, is this what Gen Z people think about millennials?
That looked like in the 90s, but yeah,
it's accurately. Out. Yeah, actually just they needed more Charlotte Hornets, hoodies and jackets.
Yes. Cause that would have been accurate.
Mm-hmm. If you know, and you all know exactly which jacket and which hoodie I'm talking about. If you know
the starter ones,
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I had a Redskins one.
Oh, I respect that.
My mom doesn't know sports teams and she just bought it. It was okay, whatever.
That's even better.
Yeah.
All right.
Before we get to the sad stuff and all that, I have to say this. is this whole thing with Magneto and Rogue? I know they dated. I get that. Mm. I know that that was a thing. Is his electromagnetic power canceling out her power on touch? Is that anywhere? Is that a thing?
That I couldn't remember. I feel like I'm a bad comic book person and an even worse X-Men person on that one, because I'm kind of like, that's not how magnetism works.
I was like, literally, that's the science is bad on this, guys.
It's like, for a show that talks about a lot of sciencey people, you're just like, oh, look, my super magnetism power means that you can't drain my energy.
Not as I get it, if he's got a protective field around him that's keeping their skin from actually touching. That's just weird.
What does that have to do with magnet? I mean, I don't know. I don't remember. I mean, it made for interesting storytelling. And we apologize to the hardcore X-Men fan if we're butchering this one to death.
Please,
sorry.
Tell us, correct us. But all I'm saying is inhibitor collars exist. Y'all've got them in the mansion. Why is this still a problem?
Modern problems require modern solutions.
I digress. I'm like, literally, we saw at least four of the X-Men in inhibitor collars before the show even really kicked off.
And that's always kind of been a thing based on the Sentinel tech and all that. So
that's like, this shouldn't still be a plot point.
Well, they kind of had to move on from it because actually the very beginning of the original X-Men series was about the fact that she was going to try to become normal, become human again so that she could actually feel touch and everything. Like that literally is like episode 1 through 5 of the original series is. And also reminding everyone that Rogue's background was she fought for the wrong team.
Yeah, I get it. But man.
So, yeah. All right. You want to help the people unpack why we actually brought this up other than the it's interesting. It's fun. It's got the nostalgia feel.
It's some of the best Marvel in a minute. Yeah.
I would argue it's some of the best Marvel and possibly some of the best X-Men.
Oh, it's definitely the best X-Men.
Because
there's not been an X-Men movie that's been dope since 2.
Heck,
First class, maybe.
I felt like I cared about the X-Men like a lot based on episode 5 alone.
Yeah.
In comparison to everything that's currently going on.
outside of Loki to season 2, this is the best Marvel thing in recent times.
Tell the people why they weep.
Oh, me?
Yeah.
Okay. So the big thing, and I'm sure you guys have seen stuff of already, because my feed was filled with remember it. People passively aggressively posting the phrase remember it. But there was a big Godzilla-ish, and they even called it Godzilla. There's a big Godzilla sentinel that went through and started slaughtering.
Big boy.
The inhabitants of Genosha, and to save Rogue's life, Gambit sacrifices himself to destroy the big Godzilla Sentinel and ends up dying.
Dead. D-E-D dead.
Because here's the thing, Magneto, air quotes,
was trying.
Died.
I don't think he's dead.
Right. That's what I'm saying. That's where the air quotes are. Magneto, air quotes, died with the Morlocks like 2 minutes prior, and nobody seems to give two craps because I've never heard anybody like,
after Magneto became the good guy the buried plot point here is Charles did die in the original series, still dead. We're in the timeline.
Nope, wrong on both counts.
Mm-mm.
They're saying he's dead. That's not how it ended in the series, and that's not where he is.
That's fair, but
he got shot. And the Shi'ar girlfriend came and took him, and they're trying to heal him in space. They're just telling the world he's dead.
Anyway, executing his will, he leaves the X-Men to Magneto.
He ain't dead, though.
We shall.
He on a spaceship with his girlfriend. He's Nick Furying it up in there. the spaces.
Marvel recycling plot points.
Over and over.
Anyway, Magneto like is in charge of the X-Men now and was being a good guy mostly so far. they also worked in his changed backstory into the show, if you caught it, because he was actually written as Vietnam era, and it was actually the movies and everyone else that threw him all the way back to the Holocaust and everything.
I've seen comics, like old school comics, deal with him in the Holocaust fashion.
I forget exactly when it changed, but they actually did adjust it at one point.
They adjusted it, but at one, like, I think the OG ones, because like I still remember this crinkly 70s paper looking one, where I want to say he was talking to Captain America or something on that same topic. But yeah, they usually just try and bounce around from generation to generation, which is why the argument when they were talking about bringing it up to date with like Denzel and Giancarlo Esposito,
right,
that, you know, if they ended up doing it to the civil rights time, it wouldn't be as powerful in comparison.
So there were all those fun things while Magneto was doing that, and I thought that was interesting. For his final words, he said them in German. But I also agree with you. I don't think he's dead.
No, not at all. But then the other thing was like the whole running gag, or not gag, but the whole running theme through the episode was, you know, Rogue choosing Magneto over Gambit because he can feel her. She can feel him.
Right.
And touch, then as Gambit lies dead in the in the Yamcha hole, Rogue says, "I can't feel you." Feel him. In the black. And I was like,
not okay. I'm not okay.
So it's good comics television.
The name's Gambit.
Remember it. Oh, let me show you my little art piece that I did as soon as it was, because you can't see the whole thing. I wanted it to be kind of obstructed, but it's the little glow of his powers with the dark skyline, and it's pretty. Look, you can see the little textures.
Oh, mon cher.
Mon cher. But yeah, so that's a thing. But no, this is good TV.
They bombed into it because this started off as a feel-good episode, the return to Genosha and everything. And I asked Hector if he caught it, but I felt good about myself. Is their first return to Genosha is there's all these fireworks, and in the first burst of fireworks, you see the reflection of the Watcher. And I was like, oh, that was really cool. And then the entire place got attacked and tons of people are dead and main characters are dead. And I was like, oh, right, the Watcher shows up.
They just had me like watching anxiously to make sure they weren't going to screw with Nightcrawler theologically.
I mean, same. And jury's out, but so far so good. We're good.
We're definitely leaning a little progressive for the 90s, but past that, we're okay.
Yeah, past that, everything's fine. So X-Men 97, like, it's not just the nostalgic feels. It does feel like they're telling us a new story. Everybody in the X-Men has been killed once or twice. Like, the whole future's past problem still exists. So the concept of that, because that's the other thing where I look at it that and go, I almost kind of go, is Gambit dead? It's like he died, but the whole jumping realities and time thing that does exist in Marvel and X-Men kind of gives you that full pause for a moment.
Could Caleb or Cable have popped in and just got him at the last second? Sure.
Right. Or whatever, or just realigning all the things, because Forge and Cable are working on stuff and we know that. But I will just say this. The thing that messed me up the most is I watched episode 4 and 5 back to back. And if you want to talk about the most wild tone change in a show, was Jubilee being stuck in a Mojoverse for an episode. And
oh,
then
yeah,
this.
That's a terrible run up to this.
Right? Like, at first I was like, that hurt. Like, I knew this was a Mojo episode as soon as I saw the title and the setup for it. But then I was like, ow, 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 ow. And then boom, everybody's dead. Wait, what?
Well, and that, and also add into the factor, I did think it was nice that they brought the original Jubilee voice to be the old Jubilee.
Yes.
That was a nice touch.
Nope, that was cool. They got a both and out of that one. That and, yes, about a third of the cast is original voices, by the way.
They're elderly.
Yes. Well, no, I mean, Rogue is original, Beast is original, Wolverine's original, and there's one other.
I'm just saying they're old though.
Yeah, you can tell. Rogue's pretty close. She's doing pretty good. So yeah, X-Men 97. It's pretty dope. So now this 100th time, tell the people the comics is that you read and tell me how on earth you ended up with an Image comic.
I'll get there.
Oh, I know which one. All right. I know which one. Never mind.
Yeah, you know which one.
Yep.
Yeah. So first off, I'm just going to go ahead and say and put this into the ether that Batman 146 was hands down the best book I read, period, for this installment.
And I knew Hector was going to say that. And out of the kindness of my heart, this time I did not steal it from him.
Good, because if I would have just quit.
it's like 100. Good.
I was like, because this was about the best one. Again,
sure.
I mean, just to point this out, literally page one, you go to having is it New 52? Mm-hmm. Yeah. You have the Joe's Garage Joker. Oh, yeah.
The death of the family. Yes, that was definitely.
You got New 52 Joker. You've got Killing Joke Joker. You've got Batman Rest in Peace, Zur-En-Arrh Joker.
Yep.
From the Grant Morrison era. And you've got all these represented so quickly right off the bat. And just continually going down this storyline of all the different crazy things they're doing. And this one issue alone made me feel validated to have picked up all these Batman books for the last like 15 years.
Yeah, I was very much on the same page that, you know, Zdarsky almost lost me. I was starting to get concerned. And then everyone's like, oh no, another Joker arc. Can we stop it with the Joker? But I'm sitting here like, I'm here for this party.
It's not just the Joker part. I mean, this is
just good.
It's just good, but it's intricately weaving stuff that
a lot of very complicated Batman lines.
If you've picked up stuff anything since 2010, it applies in this book, and I think that's a big deal for that. And it's just really solid in how its execution of that.
It's giving me Endgame vibes, and that's what got me back in the comics. Like, straight
Endgame
up
was really good. Damian's interaction with Failsafe is really good.
Still the worst.
Still.
I'm sorry. If you don't automatically say Damian's the worst after you hear the word Damian, are you really a Batman fan?
I don't know, man. I've been here since Damian's birth, and I enjoy him.
Still the worst.
You got the return, and I don't know how long of a return. It's the first time I've seen Punchline in a minute.
It was definitely the first time in a hot minute.
Yeah. So it's the first time I saw Punchline in a minute. And she actually has, you know, valid value to add to the story. So that's cool.
Yeah, it's usually better when Punchline actually does things as opposed to just is present and is a literal Punchline, which is why I kind of not liked that character since the beginning.
And I wasn't sure. Did Failsafe kill Harley's hyenas? Or are they knocked out? Because those look like just arrows.
I was kind of going back and forth on that too, because even the reaction, either was they're dead or, I mean, it set Harley off either way.
Yeah.
For sure.
And that was just like a, and Damian's reaction to Harley being punished. This was the best Punchline stuff that I've seen in a minute. And you can see that Damian's struggling with stuff. You get an Amazo reference. There's just some good content in here. And you forgot the one mayor that's kind of existed for a while. You've got to the point where even Failsafe is able to talk his way out of Superman.
Yeah, the fact that the 5G mayor technically still exists, and I still don't really know who this person is or why I care. But yeah, still has an eye patch, still mayor.
Now, if you've read any of the Fear State stuff and along that way,
right?
You'd get. And more
I
did. Of a,
I still am like, what?
Well, that's because the thing, they didn't 5G only like skipped a year. It didn't.
Yeah.
It's like when DC did 1 year later. It's a different thing, but it's not anything crazy.
But yeah, so that's a thing. Now, I will say that Napalm Lullaby number 2 was the second best book I read. It continues on with the storyline of a girl whose power is to she can dream and make you feel anything. And they're trying to go to a heaven area to kill their god is the goal. So in a lot of, it's a solid cross between His Dark Materials and the Umbrella Academy.
I see what you did there.
So
I watched that.
Yeah. And honestly, as I read this issue, because it still explores some different stuff and they have a quirky old man father who they're trying to get in line on their plan. This feels like what Umbrella Academy could be if Gerard Way was good at coherent storytelling of his own creations.
Ouch.
And its Image. But this feels like a well-executed print version of Umbrella Academy, but just with two people. So, so far, not disappointed in the slightest with this.
And if you haven't finished the His Dark Materials trilogy, you don't know why that's relevant yet.
it's
the third book.
Spoilers. The rest of the show ever drops, that's where they were heading for season 3.
They actually kept the story pretty much in the same trilogy arc, which means you're about to find out what it's about if you don't know. Spoiler, sorry. Not sorry.
Yeah. Poison Ivy has gone kind of off the rails a little bit lately. I would say the last 4 issues, they've been doing a backstory on how she got Rickrolled romantically by Jason Woodruff in the first place.
Right.
And it's just like, it's just gone. It started out like a darn near masterpiece, and now it's just like, meh. But this one had more potential than a lot of the others. But then it took you right back.
Kind of brought them back.
Kind of, but it was only brought it back because in the backstory of her creation into this role, you start getting her first interactions with Batman.
Interesting.
And so there was a graphic novel. I want to say it's Neil Adams' graphic novel. That was one of my favorite books ever, called The Poison Tomorrow.
I think you're right.
And it's Batman, Poison Ivy, and Green Arrow. And this had some Poison Tomorrow vibes.
Yes. Batman, Green Arrow, The Poison Tomorrow.
Yeah.
One shot, 1992. That one was Dennis O'Neill. I see why your brain did that.
Yep. O'Neill and Adams are kind of interchangeable in a lot of ways. Man, I met Denny O'Neill, and I really wish I'd got him to sign that instead.
Yeah.
I got him to sign my question stuff, but either way, that's great. This had some Poison Tomorrow vibes. By the way, if you like Poison Ivy at all in Batman, I highly recommend The Poison Tomorrow if you want to backtrack it.
Denny was a great writer.
Denny was wonderful. I enjoyed Denny a lot. Again, She-Hulk has also been on the if-ish fence. And I'm going to be super real with you. Poison Ivy and She-Hulk are only on this list because I had 2 slots that had to be filled.
I think I read 15 books this week, which was like, wow, these better be good.
If I would have just been making a pull recommendations, I would have given you Batman and Napalm Lullaby and stopped. But because I have a quota, here you go. This wasn't
bad. We bring you the best stuff that we read.
Yeah. this wasn't bad, but, and it did have some really quotable moments. There was some really good dialogue stuff, but it's, just in a weird relationship triangle thing in space right now. So it's just a weird vibe. Did you read the Firefly comic? Where they went to a space resort after they did a big job. There's a really good Firefly comic where they all end up at a space resort and they're supposed to take time off and chill because they actually had a score go right. It was one of my favorite Firefly comics. This is that. But
okay.
With She-Hulk and her boyfriend. And the whole reason why this was like interesting is like while he's off preparing for their big romantic date in the last book, she's sitting at the bar talking to a woman who's heartbroken and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And the reason why this was just a fun read, even if it wasn't my favorite recommendation, is because the woman that's at the bar that she's talking to is his ex-girlfriend that he had already pledged his love and life to in service.
Yeah.
So awkward love triangle. And then she's also then the ex-girlfriend has also previously been contracted by someone to kill She-Hulk. So it's a love and murder triangle. Illuminati.
It's the best kind. What?
Yep. What?
Who?
All right. That's my sort of recommendations. Go on.
All right. Oh, sort of. Well, episode 100, we're bringing you the best of the best that was mostly available to us.
On our budget and shop availability.
Oof. True story. Phantom Road is still a thing, like I said earlier. And issue 10, dang it, Jeff, get to that point. But he is. And that's why this is here, is because I've talked a lot about that. It feels like it kind of feels like there's some filler episodes here, but it's because he's finally trying to piece together like the 47 threads in this story. So the little rock ended up being a little alien baby that they're bringing to Golgotha, right? And he basically vaporized a whole SWAT team in the last issue. And you're like, wow, baby's got,
it's great to go on.
Yeah, right. But in that moment also, yeah. Except he doesn't have to. He just is like, open the eyes, people die. But in the instant that the two people transporting it touched him, they also saw the worst moment in both of their lives and they shared that experience. So it's post that, and those people are like, want to talk about it, and they're both like, no. But the one dude also finally admits that after he accidentally killed his son in the accident, that he found Jesus after that. And he is starting to, yeah, that's actually where I went, wait, what? Pastor Radar went up for a second. And he's doing I'm starting to get the feeling that I'm supposed to do this. And then that really relevant.
It's signs.
Yeah. Interestingly enough.
That responded to trauma by regaining his faith with an alien involved. Go on, Chris. Tell me how this book ripped off M. Night Shyamalan.
Except we're not sure that it's an alien still. That's the only thing.
Crying out loud.
But the whole, remember that they have the Billy Bear gas stations that are basically Bucky's in this universe that seem to be a portal between these two different universes or whatever.
And that like the whole Bucky's is a portal between our worlds.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yes. Go on.
Why do you think
art's on all the bathroom walls?
That makes sense.
Just to distract you from the entrance.
So we still don't know who the Hawaiian shirt dude is, except that dude's totally the devil. And that the devil works for the FBI.
That tracks.
But we did have the one issue that we heard about this little thing called Project Jackknife, which supposedly the FBI's agent involved in this whole story's dad worked for. And she's starting to find these pieces. Well, in this issue, a deputy that she was working with out in the field, like DC's like, nope, you done messed up. Time to come home. And she's like, not going to do that. And this deputy that's been helping her is like, so I looked into that whole Billy Beaver thing because I was really, or Billy Bear or whatever, and was really weirded out by it. And I did some research, and that place we found you is actually where the first one ever was built. And they went back and they went in the basement and they found an entire gas station in the basement. And the owner of that gas station chain standing there, and he's like, cool, you figured it out. Welcome to Project Jackknife. Scene. I have no idea what's going on, but
I'm pretty sure one of them's also a cannibal.
Could be at this point.
Just blend all your books together.
Yeah, I'm still waiting for the final one of that to drop, or it didn't show up on my shelf, and that'll just disappoint me. But either way, the Sacrificers did, which is equally messed up, if you remember. This book is kind of an aside to where this story left off, which is the daughter of Sun and Moon God finally kind of found out that mom and dad are evil and was in the process of trying to get herself killed because people realized that her parents are dead because, well, stupid things happened, which usually happens when gods try to manipulate, you know, demigods try to manipulate their people into, you know, like sacrificing their entire life so they could literally suck the joy out of them so that they can become young again. Yes, that is the point of this book if you haven't been listening. Remender actually kind of goes back and tells two side-by-side fairy tales, for lack of a better word, that have lessons, and they're the lessons that have currently been learned in this story. So this is kind of like a pause in the middle to be like, this is what's actually going on. But they also introduce us to the fact that Sun and Moon aren't the only demigods in this world. That basically when they realize that Sun and Moon aren't around, one of the guys is like, oh, I'm growing old and that's not how this is supposed to work. So he calls out I want to make sure to Aquatica, the Poseidon foil here. And like, he's like,
I'm supposed to know who that is.
No, it's, I mean, I'm starting to figure this out that, you know, it seems pretty in line with the some of the Greek hierarchy and everything. Right. And similar to that, that the people are starting to figure out that the gods kind of have self-interest in mind and kind of don't care about their playthings. Right. And Aquatica shows up and he's like, why'd you wake me? And he's like, Moon's gone. And he's like, cool, not my problem. And the person talks about, you know, you guys suck. I'm supposed to live forever, blah, blah, blah. So Aquatica brings a big old wave and destroys that dude's kingdom and kills all the people. And it's like, well, hope you learned something. And then the second half is actually the destruction of the daughter of Moon and Sun and her pain and turmoil and realizing what all the those gods have done to the people. And that kind of drops us off into what I'm thinking is going to be the second half of this story. So I just get interested when comics, like, you could just read this story and be like, oh, that's interesting. But Remender is another one of those deep thinkers. So there's more here. Ultimate X-Men's number dose. This story is...
Yeah, how is that?
It's still weird because it is very hefty in that Japanese culture. Like I mentioned last time, Peach Momoko is still drawing a beautiful book, but she tends to go to some dark places at times, and this one still is very dark. But she's slowly building this team in the Ultimate Universe of X-Men. So the first one was Armor. This one, we get introduced to Maystorm. Some of you may have to look that one up because does exist, is a Earth 616 foil for Storm in this universe, and pre-exists. But basically, it's also happening in, all in a Japanese high school, so it's Class 1A, I guess. So we now have Armor and Storm together in the story, and a very dark shadow demon of some type that is trying to get to them, but help them. And they were like, oh yeah, we saw that you cared about that kid that with the bike and stuff. So I killed the three people. And I was like, that escalated quickly.
Yeah, for real.
But still at the end of the book, there's more explanations of the cultural inferences that are made throughout, the book. And as, like I said, it appears that we're assembling a team, but it's a la Japanese high school team. So it's still interesting. It's visually, I've always been a fan of the style that, so yeah. So there's like another cool look at a different Armor.
I get it. And Armor is one of those characters I don't think it's used enough.
Right. And if you look at how Armor's always been presented, like, it just feels weird. It's like a bubble suit. But here it again, it's more like a samurai, which is kind of cool. So I don't know. And all that good stuff. So my final one is because same thing. I kind of started running out of stuff, but this was weird and interesting. And that's what I do. That's what I'm here for. 100 episodes. I'm going to give you something weird. Dark Horse and Monsters Are My Business. Yeah. Okay. kind of cartoony, but kind of cool art. Super adult.
Super adult, you say?
For violence.
Okay.
But basically, we kind of get introduced to these bounty hunters, for lack of a better word, that attack really big, spooky things. So think Scooby-Doo, but like on LSD.
So Scooby-Doo.
No. On severe psychological enhancing narcotics. Because they have a friend that's a koala, and I still don't know why he's a koala. Apparently, at some point in the history, actual acid rain falls from the sky for like a week, melts a bunch of people. People figure out going outside is bad. Half of the planet's kind of buried in all this acid, and there kind of becomes an exclusion zone. And then really bad, like Cthulhu type eldritch horrors kind of start showing up, and people are like, oh, that's bad. Yeah, that's good advice. It seems kind of bad when that happens. So you kind of got a barbarian foil that's like, let's hack up all the things. And then you have like this necromancer lady that they found a dead person, and he's like, yeah, interrogate him. And everyone's like, what? And then she does.
I did that mission on Baldur's Gate 3.
Yeah, no, that, I mean, she definitely did speak with dead. Some of you got that. And I respect you. It's crazy. I'll read it again to see if this goes anywhere, but this mostly just piqued my, well, that was weird. So I will talk about it because that's what I do. You said something about your number one being a number one.
It's a number one. As I tend to do, if there's a book I missed and I don't have time, I got Suicide Squad Dream Team number one and number two. There were two selling points based on the cover alone to make me pick up this book. A, Bizarro, which I'm down for in most settings. B, yeah. Black Alice.
Ooh.
See, I like me some Black Alice. I've loved Black Alice since Gail Simone's run on Secret Six and her presence there.
And Gail is literally the best if you've ever listened to us before.
Yes. The team is also rounded off by Harley. Surprise. I think that's Shock. A legal obligation at this point.
Seems that way.
I forgot his name, but it's Amanda Waller's niece as a... not niece. Amanda Waller's nephew as a psychic Deadshot. And it's even something like got shot in the title. It's weird.
Wow.
And then Clock King.
Oh, goodness. His name is Archie Waller.
Yeah. Yeah. Clock King and then Dreamer, who we were discussing previously, is made her debut. Like her, she was the first. She came from the Arrowverse.
Right.
So. And she has her own book called Dream or something coming out. Like, I was in the back of Red Hood, but like, she's also the leader of this because the whole plot point of this storyline is that to get to where they have to go, the Suicide Squad is going to have to travel through people's dreams to get to their destination. So they need a dream walker to do it. Razzle dazzle.
That checks out.
I bought it. I read it. I'm not reading anymore.
this happened.
It happened. I appreciated it. I feel like the writing for Bizarro was wrong. Like, you know how they do the inversion and the inversion stuff with him? Mm-hmm. They only inverted half of it.
Nah, Bizarro is supposed to be complicated to read.
Yeah, and I feel
it
like,
just is.
Like, I feel like they inverted like a little and left the rest. And I was like, y'all aren't trying.
Look, if you all go from this and give us Etrigan and he doesn't rhyme, I'm out.
Bump that junk, dude. The battle rapping Etrigan
still the best.
Still the best, bro. I don't care if any of the rest of that book even existed. I was happy for the battle rapping Etrigan. And do you remember that Brian Azzarello liked my tweet about that?
Mm-hmm. We're cool on the internet.
We're the hipsters.
So good.
All right, so that was my number one and two. I don't necessarily care that I read it, and I don't necessarily recommend that you do.
So
I did.
I guess technically mine is similar because I kind of ran out of stuffs. But I saw everyone and their cousin, apparently, first and second, were running out and getting this book called Uncanny Valley from Boom Studios.
Oh, Boom, you say.
It is. And I have no idea what's going on, but I'm going to explain what happens. First, we get introduced to a kid that literally goes out with a bunch of his friends and is asked by his friends to jump off a bridge, so they all do.
Well, that proves that theory.
I mean, it wasn't a very big bridge, but they like broke their legs and everything. And literally the mom shows up at the school and it's like, so let me get this straight. Your friends jumped off a bridge, so you did too. And I'm like, we're doing this. So we're just doing this. And
okay,
they did.
So we're doing this.
Right. Okay. So we are doing this. And they mentioned it being a cliche and everything, but I don't think that made up for the fact that that was 4 pages of this book. Anywho, mom is a traveling nurse. Kid's new in town. Also, apparently he committed light arson at lunch, and so they basically suspend him because a bunch of people jumped off a bridge in some light arson. Keeping up?
Yeah.
Good so far? Great. So it gets suspended instead of expelled, even though he's supposed to be expelled because, you know, stories and stuff. They get home. He watches a bunch of He-Man. Legally similar yet legally distinct He-Man. And then a bunch of crows like invade the house and everything goes sideways. And mom's like, don't worry, I got this. And the kid's like, excuse me? And it's basically, yeah. And the crows are going crazy and everything. They're trying to kill the boy. They're talking in English. Suddenly they look like the crows from Dumbo. I'm legit not making that up. Like, see? Yeah. And there's a big explosion. And Yosemite Sam's cousin comes through the wall. The mom says, Dad, what are you doing here? The crows chase them all out of the house. A cartoon tells a boy to get in a car. They go driving. He says, when I say run, you run. And I'm showing Hector a picture of Wile E. Coyote outline of boy running through wall. And that's where issue one ends.
It's cute. So cartoon combination world, got it.
So it's, oh shoot. I was mentally prepared for this and then I allowed it to just like get out of my head. The movie.
Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Yes. Super big vibes there.
Yeah. Oh, it's just from your description and everything, it gave strong vibes.
Except
it's also Cool World.
It might lean that way a little more because this doesn't feel like. But anyway, I figured the name Uncanny Valley was kind of purposeful.
Yeah.
I don't know, but I absolutely will read issue two to make this make sense. And sometimes I've said this 1,000 times in the show. Sometimes that's all that has to make sense is if you make me go, what the crap did I just read? Dang it. I have to spend $5 more to find out.
Yeah.
I hate you so much, but I love you so much. Comics are wonderful. Yeah, man. And just all the wild stuff of that. Like I was standing in my comic book shop this week talking with, you know, an old comic book guy that's been doing this for 45, 48 years. Like he's closing in on 50 years. of being the young comic guy, but then being the old comic guy, and shows and everything. And we were sharing all of our fun stories of all the cool people we've met over the years for the 47,000th time, that I just continue to be reminded that this space, this community is still pretty freaking amazing. We've been talking about comics for almost 6 years now, Hector and I, and technically we've been talking about them between ourselves for longer.
Yeah.
It's still just amazing to see this space, and just that insanity is going to be somebody's jam. It can be a super serious story. It could be off the wall story. It could be a story we've heard 47,000 times and we're going to want to read it every single time. And that's just cool.
See, this is what happens when we film at night, because we're used to filming early morning. Chris gets nostalgic and reflective.
I get reflective because my brain's had all day to function instead of it being like, wake up, do the thing.
Yeah. Your brain's like, remember that time we liked reading?
That's remember when we used to like that, was that? Yeah. Hey. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. That's where I was like, do you remember when we started this show and we didn't know what we were doing, and that was cool.
Five years later, we still don't know.
We still don't know.
But we have better support.
And it was cool.
It was cool.
And for all of you that need that reference, you just need to look up some old Saturday Night Live and you'll be good. You might figure that out on your own. That was awesome.
Yep.
Well, friends, the sun's getting awful low. And that is the Pull List episode 100, in the books, in your ears, in your eyeballs, because we figured out ways to make you stare at us occasionally if you want to, versus listening to us. So you can check us out on YouTube for that. But we couldn't possibly do this alone. Hector mentioned that over the years, our support at Love Thy Nerd has just grown and grown. And it allows us to just sit at our computers and be goofy for a little over an hour. And then they figure out how to package it into a thing that sounds good and looks good. But they do a bunch of other shows on the Love Thy Nerd podcast network. And you can hit all those over at lovethynerd.com. You can click on listen and you can check out all the stuff's over there. Hector's got more than one show because he likes to talk, I guess. Does he though? You can find new shows, previous episodes, all that cool stuff. We're just super thankful to the team over there and for giving us this platform to be able to do cool stuff. But it got cooler last time, so I need to tell you about it again. I haven't had a chance to mess with this yet. I don't know if you have, but Love Thy Nerd podcast network is now on Glue, GLU network, which is a streaming platform available on your Rokus and your smart TVs, and you can get it CGNU. On you can get it on your iPhones, your Android, so you can pull that up. But GLU exists to unlock the inspirational value of faith-centric programming, which technically we are. If you're shocked, well, don't be. Hector and I truly are pastors, so they tell us. And they have been partnering with Christian content creators like Love Thy Nerd and us. So we're proud to join our friends, God Squad Church, Unity Gaming, as some of the first Christian-based stuff over there for nerd culture specifically on their platform. So download the Glue GLU network app today and search for Love Thy Nerd, and you can watch us on your TV. I mean, you could do that on YouTube too, I guess, if you were really cool, but this is kind of neat. We should take a picture of that.
We should.
We're on TV, Ma. But truthfully, Hector and I do want to thank you for choosing us as your primary comic book knowledge factory on, well, pretty bi-weekly basis. So don't leave us hanging. Rate, review the show. Leave us some of them 5 stars on all of your podcasting apps of choice. We're on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher Radio, the Glue television streaming network, YouTube, and all that good stuff. Journeys upon journeys to another 100. Do we start legacy numbering next time? Just kidding. Thank you. Thank you.
But we need to change outfits during the show and make it variant covers.
Right. We're going to re-record this entire episode, but wearing different hats and t-shirts. You can visit our Patreon that still doesn't exist for Hector's ASMR, different shirts. Because we bring you the good stuff, but seriously, stop. This is why we can't have nice things.
Wait, guess what? It's a chopper.
Chopper from One Piece.
Oh, we did it. Oh, 100 episodes, fam. We're looking forward to 100 more. Thank you for listening. And remember, kids, read more comics. I'm gonna take all 7 continents as a game of Risk.